Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
American Glutton Podcast has a Patreon. Do you hate commercials? Well, we've got a Patreon. Do you want bonus episodes? That's on the Patreon. Do you want to hang out and chat in our Discord channel? That's part of the Patreon too. We even have an option where you can leave me voicemails. All on the Patreon. So check it out today, patreon.com/AmericanGlutton. We have a Patreon.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. American Glutton is brought to you by Trifecta. I used to sit and weigh and measure everything out, and I don't do that anymore. You know why I don't do that anymore? Because Trifecta does it for me. All my long, arduous Sunday spent on meal prep, I don't do that anymore because I get a big box of portioned, cooked food every week from them, and I don't have to get overly thoughtful about it. They have taken all that energy and done it for me. Thanks, Trifecta. Today on American Glutton, I welcome Gretchen Rubin. She is one of today's most influential and thought-provoking observers of happiness and human nature. She's a highly acclaimed writer, known for her ability to distill and convey complex ideas from science to literature to stories from her own life with levity and clarity. Please enjoy. Gretchen Rubin, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
I'm so happy to be talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Something I've found for myself, and I've talked to some people who have found this also, has been that they have gone after stuff with the pursuit of happiness in mind and gotten the things that they believed would bring them happiness and then not been happy. And I found that over and over again. I lost 300 pounds and I thought that this would solve every problem I had and that I would not experience melancholy anymore. And that just wasn't the case. I'm so excited to talk to you because I feel like you're the expert on this. What's going on with my mind?
Well, that's called the arrival fallacy, which is the belief that I'll be happy when I lose a bunch of weight. I'll be happy when I move. I'll be happy when I switch careers. I'll be happy when I graduate. I'll be happy when I get married. And it, just as you report, what the research suggests is that people usually don't get some huge rush of happiness when that happens, partly because by the time it's happened, it's already sort of been worked into your life. You know, like you don't lose your 300 pounds in one day. You're doing that gradually. So you're experiencing that over time. And then also every new state brings its own issues. So you get a new job and that's great, but now you have a Now you've got a bunch of new responsibilities and you've got new things that you have to figure out. So unless it's something like you won an award where they just hand it to you and you walk off the stage, where it's just like, that's just pure fun. You don't expect it. It comes out of nowhere. It's so exciting. Or my sister and I talk about wanting to get a present in the mail, where it's like, I just to get a lovely little surprise that sort of doesn't demand anything from me. But, you know, you buy that new house. Well, now you got to fix the gutters and figure out where the TV goes. And so a lot of times, you know, that's why I think it's important to enjoy the process, because if you can enjoy the process, then you're not hanging around waiting for some kind of, you know, what's going to happen at the very end, which, as you say, often you don't experience it in a way that you might anticipate that you would.
Yeah, no, I definitely, and I think that's correct, because, and at least for me and anecdotally, I don't know about broad scale, but for me, happiness is like setting a goal and achieving a goal. And mm-hmm. and if it's a daily thing and I've got my daily stuff, you know, even if it's just getting out of bed, I might experience a little bit bump of happiness. It's not like elation or joy or ecstasy or right. something like that, but these little bumps.
Well, when I was writing the Happiness Project, I was trying to understand, well, how do you even think about happiness? Like I needed some kind of framework to think about it. And I thought about, well, you can think about happiness as feeling good, feeling bad, feeling right in an atmosphere of growth. So feeling good is we want love and enthusiasm and friendship and, you know, all the things that are good, we want more of. And then we want less of the things that make us feel bad, like guilt, anger, resentment, indignation, remorse. You want less of that. Then you want to feel right, which is you want to feel like your life lives up to, you're living up to your values in your life. So sometimes you do things to live up to your values that don't feel good, but that you're like, well, this is part of like right action and me being the kind of person that I want to be, even if it sometimes is, it can be kind of, you know, there's just sometimes downsides, you know, it can be a pain to be an environmentalist or whatever, but you do it because it's important to you. But what you're talking about is an atmosphere of growth. We're happier when we feel like we're growing or learning or teaching or helping or fixing something in some way in the world. We're making the world better. We're making ourselves better. And that atmosphere of growth is a really important engine of happiness, because it's kind of something that even if a lot of other things are going on in our life, this is something that we can sort of persist in. And I think for a lot of people, it's like, it may not be the biggest thing in the world, but it's like, I'm putting one foot in front of the other and I'm doing it. And there is a real happiness that it really does add to our happiness to do that.
Is it important how we define it for ourselves and how we think about it? Because like, I, as you were saying that, I could think about the ways I used to think about it, and I'm a sober person who was also morbidly obese. So I've like done battle with two things, mm-hmm. and both of those things, I would tell myself, no, this substance or food makes me happy, so I'm going to continue using it. And it really required me to shift the way I thought of it to become powerful over it. And I wonder if that's the same with happiness.
Well, I started my career in law, and I spent an entire semester, you know, arguing about the definition of contract. And I think happiness is an even more elusive concept. There's something like 15 or 17 academic definitions of happiness. Now, for myself, I kind of think that for the layperson, it's like, if you want to say it's peace or joy or satisfaction, or, you know, it's kind of like, I like the idea that it's loose enough that we can all bring our own definition to it. I think what's more helpful, and this kind of goes back to what you were talking about, is it's more helpful to think about, well, is this going to make me happier next week, next month, next year? Do I think that if I do this or stop doing this, it's going to make me happier? I feel like for many people, that's very clear. Whereas, am I happy? Does this make me happy? How do I stay happy? That to me feels very confusing and kind of abstract, and everything's tangled up in everything else. But if you're like, well, if I really made an effort to get to sleep by 11 p.m. every single night, do I think that would make me happier? I think for that, we often have a lot more clarity. So I think about being happier, moving in the right direction, more than I think about like the absolute state.
Right. Because the absolute state comes and goes, and then it's almost intangible when it's happening.
Absolutely. And like the minute you start thinking about it, it kind of slips away. You can also be very happy and very unhappy at the same time. Sometimes things that, like we were talking earlier, sometimes you'll do something that makes you feel right that actually makes you feel bad. So it's like, you're going to visit your sick grandfather in the hospital and you so hate going to the hospital, and it's really hard, you know, and you dread it, and then you look back on it and no part of it is good, but you do it because you're a loving grandchild. And it's like, and so are you happy? Are you unhappy? Like, what does that even mean? And so I find it very, as somebody who just thinks about happiness all the time, I still find it it's a very complex concept. So I kind of try to find ways to work around it rather than to look directly at the sun.
That is such a super interesting one that you bring up with, and a great analogy, because I don't know that I could have really gotten there with food, but I can now, building on that and thinking about like what I believe is right might not create happiness in the now, but it will lead to potentially a greater abundance of happiness in the future.
Absolutely.
And then even with your grandfather, it's like, you know, unless your grandfather gets better, which many don't in the hospital, it could all just be sad, but you did it because you believed it to be the right thing to do.
Right. And so is that happiness? I think some people would argue yes. Some people would say it's something else. And so I sort of feel like, well, let's just mix all these things up and say they're part of having a happy life. Part of a happy life means living up to your values, even if that means, it's like, maybe you got to go way out of your way to vote, or you've got to stand in a long line and that's inconvenient, but you're like, well, that's just the way it's got to be. If I'm going to vote and it's important to me to put my values into the world that way. So I think it's just good to recognize that all these things can be happening at once.
Do you think cavemen worried about happiness, or like hunter gatherers? Do you think it's got something to do with the fact that we have maybe more time on our hands, that we can even sit here and have this conversation, that it's something that like I spend time thinking about?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because a lot of times people will say like, oh, well, first you worry about, you know, food and drink and safety and all that. And that's certainly true, that like, if the very essentials of your life are, you know, or you have to fight for those, you're going to do that. But it's also true that you see, I mean, just in that, and this is not something that I've thought about a lot, but you see with people who really are, you know, they have that very challenging lives, they still have time to put beautiful things on their walls. They still have time to tell each other stories and sing songs, and they worry about the way they look. You know what I mean? They're looking for this like beauty and story, and there are some people that they want to be with more than others, would, you know, and so I think that it's part, you know, it's part of what we want in our lives.
It's a very human thing, I think.
It's a very human thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the cavemen painted on their walls.
They sure did.
And we, you know, I think we have spoken
stories. They buried beautiful things with their dead. I mean, I don't know what cavemen, like, I forget. I get all my, you know, all those thousands of years ago, folks, I get the timelines confused, but sure.
Yeah, we can definitely find, I mean, we can find 10,000 year old mummies that have tattoos, and that was very clearly an aesthetic thing, right? Or
religious,
tribal or religious, right? But it had, it was more than, it wasn't for
utilitarian.
Right, exactly.
Yes, yes.
So it added to happiness.
Right, right.
Feasibly, maybe.
Right.
What's the secret to happiness then?
Well, there's a couple ways to answer that. So if you're going to say like, what is the secret to happiness? Ancient philosophers and contemporary scientists would say relationships. If we want to be happy, we need to have strong relationships. We need to have deep, enduring bonds. We need to belong. We need to be able to confide. We need to be able to get support and give support. Both are important for happiness. So anything that deepens our relationship to people or broadens our relationships to other people is something that's likely to make us happier. But another thing that you can think about is self-knowledge, because we can all build a happy life only on the foundation of our own nature, our own interests, our own values. And so we really have to know ourselves. And it's easy to just think, well, we're all just the same, which is not true. People have very different perspectives on the world, different values, different interests, different habits. And it can be hard to know ourselves, because you think, well, I just hang out with myself all day long. Of course I know myself, but often we're very blinded by the way we wish we were, or the way we think we ought to be, or what other people expect from us. And so I think for a lot of people, it's a process. And I'll give you an example, and maybe you'll identify with this, is so I'm a person who had a super serious sweet tooth, like really a very driving sweet tooth, a distracting sweet tooth, boring sweet tooth, right? Very hard to manage. And then I was reading something by Samuel Johnson, you know, the great 18th century lexicographer. And he said, somebody offered him a little wine. And he said, "Child, I can't take a little. Abstinence is as easy to me as temperance would be difficult," meaning he could have none, but he couldn't have a little bit. Right. When I read that, I thought, that is me. I can have no Thin Mint cookies, or I can have 10 Thin Mint cookies, but I can't have one Thin Mint cookie. I can't have half a dish of ice cream. I can't have a little mini brownie, because I can't have one square of fine chocolate that I keep in my desk drawer. If I start, I got to go all the way, but it's not that hard for me to have none.
Yeah.
And when I was writing my book Better Than Before about habit change, I talked about this as the strategy of abstaining. But this is a strategy that doesn't work for everybody. I'm an abstainer. It's easier for me to have none. But then there are moderators, and they do better when they have it a little bit or sometimes, and they get kind of panicky and rebellious if they're told they can never have something. And so it's like, well, and like, people are different. I'm a moderator about wine because I don't really care about wine. I can have half a glass of wine. Whereas I have a friend who's like, it's no wine or it's four glasses of wine. There's no moderation for me. So we're probably, most of us are a mix. But when you're facing strong temptation, it's really a useful thing to know about yourself. Because I don't know about you, but everybody's always saying, like, moderation is pleasant to the wise. And, you know, don't be too hard on yourself and follow the 80-20 rule. And these things just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
And then it was a huge relief to realize, well, that works for some people. Those are great ideas for some people. But for someone like me, maybe something different would work better. And then I tried it and I was like, oh, this is so much better for me. This is so much easier for me. It's so much more pleasant for me. And again, I'm not saying it's true for everyone, but it's true for me. And I had to know myself. And once I knew myself, then I was able to recognize a pattern that was much, much just easier for me.
Are those the two categories that you like, moderators and abstainers? Are there broadly more, or is this, you know, I'm always trying to figure all of this out. And I look at my wife, who can leave a couple sips of wine in her glass, and I just, it perplexes me, because I, as a person who is abstinent from alcohol, look at that, and it's like a glitch. It's like, how do you do that?
Well, I mean, I kind of think it's easier to just embrace yourself. And instead of trying to turn yourself into someone else, because if you can't leave a few sips of wine, just be like, well, that's how she is, and I'm not the same way.
Sure.
Rather than trying to be like, well, I should, because the thing is, a lot of times we'll say to each other, well, you should be able to do this, or you shouldn't. Why should you? Well, when it comes to alcohol, people are accepting that a lot of times people have to kind of like just give it up altogether with things like nicotine. But then there's other things where people say, well, you should. Somebody said to me, you should be able to just enjoy a brownie. And I'm like, well, why should I? Because I'm telling you, it doesn't work like that for me. Right. You know, that's just my experience. And so my experience is my experience. But I think some people are like, well, I need to like learn how to like deal with it, instead of being like, well, maybe I just feel better if I accept it.
Yeah.
You get people with conflict, like you and your wife, where one person's like, well, I've got to keep the ice cream in the freezer. And the other person's like, but if there's ice cream in the freezer, I'm going to eat all of it. And the person's like, well, just have one little bowl. Like, what? Just, you know, and you're like, I can't, you know,
it doesn't work that way.
You just have that, just recognizing that people are different.
Yeah. I wish that abstinence from food was a thing.
Okay, because you can abstain from certain foods.
100%.
You can't abstain, just the way you can't abstain from drinking.
Right.
But you can abstain from alcohol.
Yeah, no, 100%. And that's the thing. And I am a big believer in moderation, but even as I say that, like, I wouldn't have a moderate portion of a brownie. That's not a part of my meal plan at all.
I do feel like in our culture, there's like, people really value moderation, and they really say that everyone should be moderate. I'm like, I can't be moderate.
Yeah.
Like, I get why it makes sense on paper. It makes all kinds of sense on paper. I'm just saying, it doesn't work for me.
The minute I
have it, then I have to go through the whole thing. Now, more, later, I deserve it. That doesn't count. It's my birthday. After the day I've had, I'm going to be so good tomorrow. I was so good yesterday. And I don't even want to say good, because I know we shouldn't say good or bad, but I'm just saying, like, you just have to deal with all these, even saying to yourself, well, don't say this, don't say that. It's just like, just don't have it at all. And then you just go about your business.
It's a complicated game. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just like, I just want to stay out of that game. That's a very boring, draining game for me. And again, I think it's all for us to decide, well, what works for me? Because if somebody's saying this works for me, therefore it will work for you, it's like, look, that's like saying, what's the best way to cook an egg? Right. I don't know. It depends on how you like to eat your eggs. Or maybe you don't like eggs at all. There is no one best way. So each of us sort of has to figure it out for ourselves. And so, and again, it's thinking like, well, it's just as valid for someone to say, you know what? I just find it really boring to try to manage that. I just do better when I don't have it. It's just like, that to me feels more free and easy. And that's definitely, I just remember the tremendous relief I felt when I was like, oh, I could just stop eating sugar.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, wow, that would just like be so great.
Right. Yeah. For me, I never had such a sweet tooth, but it's like fast food. I just don't eat fast food. That's like pretty much off limits. It's not a food source anymore. And then
there you go. You're just like, it's not that I'm not, it's just, I'm not going to have fast food. And then you're not managing this much, that much today, tomorrow. It's just like, okay, I don't eat that. Okay.
Well, so- but I still do. I will say, I want to say though, for the record that, within that, I am abstinent in areas. I still have to control myself with the foods I'm allowed to eat. So it's not, I can't be, reckless with those foods, with sure. olive oil and meat and rice and whatever I am eating. I still, so there is some aspects of moderation, but it is much harder for me than abstinence.
But don't you think it's much easier to be moderate about olive oil than it is about something like French fries?
If I've done diets where it was like, and you can have as much olive oil as you want. And I would drink cups a day, but I would bathe all my vegetables in it. Okay. So it's easier to be moderate about olive oil than it is about French fries, certainly, but I can still eat too much olive oil.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. What's interesting, I don't know if you've experienced this, but so my next book is about, it's called Life in Five Senses, and it's all about how we can tap into our five senses for like more happiness and connection and memories. And one of the things I realized is we all live in such different worlds of sensation. Like you think that we're just experiencing the objective world, but we aren't at all. And one of the things that had always puzzled me about when I like went to a very low carb diet was people kept saying to me, but how are you, there are all these food cues in the environment. How could you do this so easily? And I was like, I don't know. Why was it so easy for me to do this? Because it really, once I made up my mind, it wasn't that hard. And I don't feel like I'm constantly being pestered by food cues. And then I realized, you know, our brains show us what they think we need to know. So if we have little kids, it tells us about toys and children's TV shows. And if it knows we love music, it tells us that about a new concert. And if we learn a new word, we notice a new word. So our brain is like, it's telling us what it thinks we need to know, not like some objective. And so I realized when I stopped eating like a lot of sugary foods, my brain was like, we don't eat that. That's not very interesting. So we're going to like dial that stuff back. So even things like sweet smells, like, you know, you're walking through an airport and you smell like the Auntie Anne's or the Cinnabon or whatever. And I realized that comes to me very dimly. Yeah. You know, I experience it, but it feels like it's just like a little echo going through. It's like smelling hand sanitizer. It's not like, oh my gosh, where'd that wonderful smell come from? And so I think part of it is that people maybe don't realize that that they won't be overwhelmed by food cues constantly. At least that was my experience. Like looking back on it, I'm like, I think that just my experience of the world kind of adapted.
Do you think you can intentionally alter those sensory experiences?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Through your attention.
It's just attention. Like, and does that mean like the longer you abstain or the longer you keep yourself away from something, the less power it has over you, the less you're experiencing it sensorily?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Growing up as a kid, my mom would never let us have real cereal. When I say real cereal, I mean the stuff that you'd find at a normal grocery store. My mom would get us the cardboard shavings at the health food store, and I was always miserable with my cereal. And then I would magically go to my friend's house, and they would have real cereal, and I would be so envious, and I would sit and eat bowl after bowl of delicious frosted goodness, sugary, wonderful stuff. And then I grew up and I was able to buy my own cereal, but that lasted all of 2 minutes because then I started dieting, so cereal left my life entirely. Well, not anymore. Not anymore. Now there's Magic Spoon, which is high protein cereal. My favorite flavor is their peanut butter. It's incredible. Variety pack. Four flavors are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Only 140 calories a serving. It's high protein, has 0 grams of sugar, keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, and soy free. It's incredible. Go to magicspoon.com/glutton and grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code GLUTTON at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember, start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/glutton and use the code GLUTTON to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
Well, I wouldn't want to make that claim because, it's a, like you said at the beginning, it's data point of one. It's one person's anecdote. And I really want to talk to some scientists about this because I'm like, I haven't heard anybody like really talking through this this consequence. But it's definitely true that if you are just like trying, and I think people see this through certain kinds of like mindfulness meditation where they're doing like the 5-4-3-2-1 exercise where you're like really tuning into your environment. If you really say to yourself, look, I love good smells, but I don't really take the time. And I'm just going to, every time I'm going to smell the orange, I'm going to smell the fresh towels. I'm going to smell, it's this marvelous hardware store smell. Like I love the smell of a hardware store. I'm really going to like lean into that and amplify that and stop and notice it. You will start to notice like a lot more. I experienced this kind of in the positive and negative because I'm not much of a sound person. Mm-hmm. And so I was making a big effort as I was working on this book to listen more to sound and to music. But what I also noticed is that I started being much more annoyed by bad sounds, like music in the airport or like a restaurant that had music that was too loud. Like because I was paying more attention, you know, I noticed, you know, just like you have visual clutter, I was realizing, ooh, I have auditory clatter. That before I was just kind of tuning out but it also meant that I was much more aware of beauty and just kind of the richness. And so for me, it's worth it. I'm like, I'd rather have a richer experience and experience kind of the highs and the lows. But you definitely are like dialing into that sense. And that I really felt like it brought so much to my life.
And is that a cognitive, like checklist that you've made of like, if I stop to smell the things and experience these things that I enjoy, whether it's tactile or sound or seeing something or feeling it or what I said that, but that will net increase long-term happiness?
I think so. Because what I found is like, so our senses, you know, this is how we connect with the world. And first of all, it's a great way to connect with other people because we often will connect through sensory experiences, like very typically a meal, but we could also go to a museum or go to a sound bath or, you know, go on a hike. It brings up memories. Like what I found is that, and Proust, of course, is very famous for like memories tied to sensations, but I found that like I started having all these memories coming back and I would even do things like well, like taste timeline, like what were the tastes of my childhood and what were the tastes of my children's childhood and what did I, what were the tastes of college? And that was just like a way to open up all these memories to me. I think it sparks creativity because like you're more connected to the world and this is just like more input. And, you know, the more you put in, the more you can get out and kind of the more sparked you get. And it's what just delightful. I mean, one of the things we see, and this comes up with food too, is like sometimes people need a little treat. Like they need a little boost and they don't want to deserve it or work for it. You know, they want it just like, they're like a cell phone that needs to plug into the wall and get a charge. And you want to give yourself healthy treats, but not, you don't want to do something to make yourself feel better that just ends up making you feel worse. So you want to give yourself healthy treats. And there's so many things like, maybe it is a beautiful smell. And like, if you have a beautiful smell, then maybe you don't need to reach for a snack. Or if you like, I created an audio apothecary where I'm like, I'm going to have the songs because I tend to like sort of melancholy meditative songs. And I'm like, no, I need to feel good, pump you up, happy day songs that if I need to give myself a lift, because research shows that listening to upbeat music is one of the quickest, easiest ways to intervene in your mood. Like, let me have that playlist all ready to go. And if I need it, I can just like hit play. So we can think about tapping into our senses to give us that delight and also that comfort, because sometimes we need to like bring down our anxiety. And the senses just offer us like so many opportunities for that. Once we think about, okay, how do I dial into that power?
Okay. And on that line, is that something that we have to do sparingly? Like, can you overwhelm your senses and dull them? You know what I mean? Like, as you say all that, I'm thinking like, you know, a double from In-N-Out would be my taste thing. And that's not even true. Maybe Fatburger, whatever it is, it's going to be a big fatty cheeseburger from a fast food restaurant. But I'm not doing that, right? So I'm staying away from that because I actually think I'll be happier in the long run. But I know that when I was eating those things, I wasn't getting that kind of joy out of it. So I'm just wondering, like, with your playlist, if you played that all the time, would it lose its effect?
Well, that's a really good point, because a lot of times, like a beautiful smell, like you can't even, because of odor fatigue, you literally cannot keep smelling it.
Right.
And you're right, you can wear things out. That's absolutely true. And so part of it is, you don't want to do something to make yourself, like I said, that makes you, to make yourself feel better in the moment, that just makes you feel worse on the long term. So that's an unhealthy treat. So the In-N-Out burger is an unhealthy treat. It might feel great now, but you don't look back on it with pleasure.
Right.
You'd probably, you know, you wish you'd gotten your treat some other way. Whereas something like a crossword puzzle or doing Wordle. But there are a lot of things where, you know, every medicine can become poison. And if you're like, hey, it's really fun for me to watch an episode of The Office and it just like gives me a lift and puts me in a good mood. But if I watched it for 7 hours,
right. I feel like I'm just the guy hitting it. What's the button I can find to press? Okay. And I will just overpress it.
Well, you know, and sometimes it's true that we enjoy things more when we enjoy them less, and that, right. and that we have to find that balance. And so, yeah, I mean, the thing is like, can you find something that feels like a healthy treat where you don't have to hold back? Because I think it is nice to have something where you're like, I can just have as much as I want. For instance, I let myself have as much coffee as I want. I mean, at a certain point, well, like not, or I'll switch to decaf. And then sometimes it does like at a certain point affect my stomach. But I drink a huge amount of coffee. And some people would say like, Gretchen, possibly that's too much coffee. And I've just like looked at the research and looked at my own self. And I'm like, look, I eat a very, very low carb diet, almost never drink alcohol. I don't smoke. I wear a seatbelt. I don't ride motorcycles. I'm vaccinated. Like, I'm just going to drink a lot of coffee.
Yeah, I'm having my coffee.
I want to have something where I'm like, you know, I can have as much as I want. So maybe you can find something like that where you're like, I love Wordle. And if I want to do Wordle for 2 hours, I don't even think you can, right? Isn't Wordle like self-limiting? I don't know how to do it.
I only get one word a day. But yes, as you're saying that, I have a little dog that my 17-year-old brought home like the first week of the pandemic, and she goes to boarding school. So she then, when she went back to school, she left me with the dog, and I kind of didn't like the dog, and now it's my dog and I love the dog.
Yeah.
And I can feel happy just petting the dog.
But see, that's perfect. See, that's a perfect, it's sensory, right? Because it's the feeling of it. And it's also back to the idea of relationships. It's feeding that relationship. It's fun. It's playful. Like you can go out in the yard. yard and throw a ball, or you can like curl up on the sofa. You can, I mean, give them a treat.
The dog takes me on a walk. Yeah. So we're both getting exercise. Yeah,
it's great. It connects you to other people. Right. No. So that's something where a lot of people talk about that they will turn to like a cat or a dog in order to get to give themselves that kind of lift, because you can't sort of can't overdo it. Other than just like sheer time, where if you like spent your entire day doing that, there's other things.
But I think I'm getting more from what you're saying too, which is interesting that I want to start to try to do, which is like, if I pass something that smells good, to maybe take an extra moment to experience that, or, you know, if I see something that's beautiful, rather than just very quickly, whatever my base acknowledgement in my head of that's beautiful, yes, maybe spend another moment looking at it, you know,
yes,
as I'm petting the dog, maybe go like, oh yeah, just the act of petting this bizarre tiny animal,
yes,
somehow makes me feel better. And that's, yes, nice, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Is really to like allow ourselves to revel in those experiences. Cause it's true. There's like all these things kind of coming at us. And again, our brain is kind of like a lot of times sort of dialing all this down, so we're not overwhelmed, because we're like, oh, it's so important to think about my to-do list. So I don't like, so that's uppermost in my mind, and everything else is sort of, but if you pay attention to it, like the rain, you know, the sound of rain. I mean, it seems like everybody likes the sound of rain, because you like, you know, it's like you can play YouTube videos for 8 hours. You can get soundtracks. People love the sound of rain. But when it's actually raining, do you sit and listen to the sound of rain? Probably not. Right. And you're like, why don't I just sit here for 5 minutes and just listen to what the rain sounds like? Because yeah, rain in New York City, where I live, is very different from rain in Kansas City, where I grew up. And I could sit and just feel like, oh, let me take that in. But a lot of times we don't pause to take that in. And when we do, it's just, it makes our environment so much richer.
Yeah. And to the point about like, you know, you talked about people experiencing different things differently. And, yes, and I think about that all the time, because I'm a firm believer in, you know, most of what I'm talking about with people is diet, right? And health and stuff like that. And like, yeah, what's the lens that we're going to view that through? And I am a firm believer in there is no one size fits all.
Right.
Everybody's, yes, got to figure it out for themselves, basically. But that said, I think about the you know, the blue and black or white and gold dress, yeah, picture. Yes.
Yeah.
And I think about like, what else do I just not realize that somebody else is actually experiencing differently than me?
Okay. Can I hit you with something?
Please. Yeah.
Okay. So this is, that dress thing. There's also Laurel Yanny, which, yes, is a thing, audio thing. Okay. But so here's a different way of thinking about how people approach the world differently. And I really want to hear like what your take on this. Okay. So this is a personality framework that I came up with when I was writing my book Better Than Before, which is all about habit formation, because I was really curious about why some people were able to form habits more easily than others, or some people seemed to form some habits easily, but other habits were really hard. Some people didn't like the idea of habits at all. I love the idea of habits. So I was trying to understand this. And what I realized is it comes down, this is a narrow aspect of your nature, but it's very important. And it's how you respond to expectations. So we all face two kinds of expectations: outer expectations, which is like a work deadline, and inner expectations, like I want to stop eating fast food. So depending on whether you meet or resist outer and inner expectations, it makes you an upholder, a questioner, an obliger, or a rebel. And if people want to take the quiz, it's short, it's free. 3.5 million people have taken the quiz. They can take it and get an answer and a little report.
Where do we find the quiz? I want to
go to GretchenRubin.com/4tendencies, F-O-U-R tendencies, and you can take the quiz. But I will describe it to you right now, and a lot of your listeners will know instantly who they are. We could do the Game of Thrones characters. We can do the Office characters. These are very blatant once you know what to look for. Okay, right. So upholders readily meet outer and inner expectations. So they meet the work deadline. They keep a New Year's resolution without much fuss. They want to know what other people expect from them, but their expectations for themselves are just as important. So they tend to love to-do lists and schedules. They're very focused on execution. Their motto is discipline is my freedom. Then there are questioners. Questioners question all expectations. They'll do something if they think it makes sense. So they're making everything an inner expectation. If it meets their standard, they'll do it no problem. If it fails their standard, they will push back. And they complain about things that are arbitrary or unjustified or unreasonable. They have to know why. They tend to love to customize. They tend to love research. So their motto is, If you convince me why, then I will comply. Okay, hand up. He's got his hand up. Okay, we'll come back to that.
Okay.
Next is obligers. Obligers readily meet outer expectations, but they struggle to meet inner expectations. So like I was talking to a friend of mine who said, I don't understand it. I know I'm happier when I exercise. And in high school, I was on the track team and I never missed track practice. Why can't I go running now? Well, because when she had a team and a coach expecting her to show up from the outside, she did it no problem. When she was trying to go for a run on her own, she was struggling. And so for obligers, and these are people who say things like, I can keep my promises to other people. Why can't I keep my promises to myself? Why do I make everybody else the priority? I don't make myself the priority. The solution, the very straightforward answer, is to create outer accountability. You create outer accountability even to meet an inner expectation. So if you want to read more, you join a book group. If you want to exercise more, you take a class, you work out with a friend who's annoyed if you don't show up, you raise money for a charity, you think of your duty to be a role model or to be healthy for other people. There's a million ways to create outer accountability once you know that is what you need. And so these are the people who come through for everybody else. They're the rock of the world, but they have to have that outer accountability for themselves. So their motto is, you can count on me, and I'm counting on you to count on me. Right. And then the last category is rebels. And rebels resist all expectations, outer and inner alike. They want to do what they want to do in their own way, in their own time. They can do anything they want to do, anything they choose to do. But if you ask or tell them to do something, they're very likely to resist. So they typically don't even tell themselves what to do. Like they don't say something like, well, I'm going to quit eating bread, because I talked to a guy, he's like, I decided to quit eating bread. And the next day I went out and ate an entire loaf of sourdough bread, because no one tells me what to do. Not even me.
Yeah.
So their motto is, you can't make me and neither can I. But they have their own way of changing their habits. That's for the rebel way. So these are the four tendencies. So you say you're a questioner. That
well,
really resonated with
no,
you?
It did, but
there is a crossover. There are crossovers.
I feel like I have a little bit of the obliger too. So like I can look at my sobriety and my adherence to my physical stuff and goals and diets, and I can kind of lump that all and go, even though it's not really because she didn't ask me to do any of it, I kind of pin it on my wife and go,
maybe that's your why, which is one right. of the reasons that I'm doing it is because I want to support this relationship.
Yeah,
so that's a person
right.
can be, it's more like,
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Let's say somebody said to you, hey, you have to do this at 7:50 a.m. every day. Would you be like, why do I have to do it at 7:50? It makes sense for me to do it at 7 a.m. I'm going to do it my way. Why would I listen to you? No, and somebody 100%. Else is like, are you going to check in on me at 7:50? Because if you are, I'll send you a text.
No. I don't care if they check in on me. I'm not doing it at 7:50.
You're a questioner.
Unless there's a reason.
You're 100%. Unless there's a reason.
Unless it makes sense. Right. Unless I have something to do at 8:50, I'm not doing it at 7:50.
Right. So you sound like so questioner is the second largest. Obliger is the biggest tendency for both men and women. So if you're thinking about yourself or somebody else, it's very likely that they're an obliger, which means they probably need outer accountability.
That doesn't make sense for me.
But questioner is the second largest one. Okay. So if you're thinking about like a curriculum or a program or something like that, you can figure out like a lot of people are going to be obligers or questioners. Rebel is the smallest tendency. And my tendency is the second smallest tendency. It's the upholder tendency. And those are like kind of the fringe personality types. So those are smaller. So
I feel like the people that I look at and admire are those fringes. And but they're also probably the serial killers. Like you get the best and the worst in those fringes.
Well, it's interesting because I think because I had sort of a more extreme personality types, it was easier for me to spot what was going on in the other personality types, because like obligers, I think a lot of obligers think everybody in the world is an obliger. They'll say things like, well, why is it the busy parents like us can't take time for ourselves? And right. I'm like, well, I'm a busy parent. I don't have any trouble taking time for myself. I think obligers sometimes think everybody in the world is an obliger, and a lot of people are. So they kind of, they see that. And then questioners are like, well, why would anybody do something that didn't make sense?
Yeah.
Like that doesn't make sense that people, and I'm like, well, look around you and you will see that many people do things that doesn't, like, that's not enough, clearly, because otherwise we would all be working perfectly. And so I think being coming from an unusual situation helped me see the other categories more easily. Because rebels are so opposite from upholder. That was very obvious to me because I was like, wow, these people are living in a completely different universe from me. How do we think differently? So I think in coming up with a framework, I mean, again, that's GretchenRubin.com/4tendencies for people who want to take the quiz.
And then we can build on that, knowing that or having that as the idea. It's kind of cool to build on it. Like knowing, you know, the really fascinating thing, like as you said that, I've done every fad diet that has existed. And in the version of me today, I'm always like, how did I do some of these really stupid diets, right? Like where you just cut out lectins and you're supposed to lose 200 pounds by cutting out lectins, which just makes no sense at all. But I realized like I was sold on it. I was convinced because I didn't do that blindly. Somebody, marketed that well enough that it handled all my weird questions. And I believed it and I did it.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is like, once you were convinced, then your behavior followed pretty easily. And that's what you would see with a questioner. And I don't know if you've experienced this. This is very common with questioners, is analysis paralysis. So sometimes like a questioner will say something like, well, I know I should exercise, so I don't understand like why I'm not moving forward. And I'm like, I bet that in your mind, you haven't really decided that on what kind of exercise is like the most efficient, the best for you, the optimal one. And so you're sort of spinning your wheels. And so because for once questioners are like, yes, high intensity weight training is the way for me, then their behavior follows. And so a lot of times when there's analysis paralysis, it's like, okay, the way you get through that is through reason, is through really making up your mind about what you believe is the most reasonable solution for you. Or if you sort of can't get enough information, or, you know, sometimes we have to act without enough information, you say things like, it's more efficient to get started and learn, because I'll start doing this exercise. And if it's not working, I will have learned that this doesn't work. And maybe that'll show me what would work better. I'm going to iterate, I'm going to experiment, but to do nothing is like the least efficient, you know, like don't get it perfect, get it going.
Right.
Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, all that.
Right. But so you're questioners convincing can yourself tell to figure it out.
Yeah. Questioners can go through that and be like, well, is no exercise better than 80% exercise? Okay. Let me do 80% exercise. And then I'll try to get to 99% exercise or whatever, because they can't get stuck.
Yeah. Whatever formula you're going to figure out, whatever formula is going to work, you have to start. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
That's amazing. And you have formulas for each one of these groups?
Yeah, no, there's each one of them have strength, like tremendous strengths and also kind of corresponding weaknesses. So like one thing you see with obligers, and maybe you've seen this, is like obliger rebellion, which is when obligers feel like taken advantage of or exploited or ignored. They'll kind of explode and say, well, this I will not do. And it can be something like, I'm not going to answer your emails for 2 weeks. Or it can be something really big, like I'm going to quit my job right now, right, today. Or I'm going to end a 30-year friendship, or I'm going to get a divorce. Like there's just an explosion. And they are often themselves say, like, I'm acting out of character. I don't know where this came from. The people around them are like, you know, you said you would be on this committee. I don't know why you're so angry. But when you know about obliger rebellion, you see it coming a mile away. There's building anger, building resentment. Their behavior starts to slip. Like, this person doesn't usually do this or that, and yet I'm starting to see these behaviors. It's building. And then, you know, like they use metaphors like a volcano erupting, like, and sometimes it's very beneficial. Sometimes it ends a situation that for an obliger has become kind of unbearable. And so it can be very, very positive, but sometimes it can be, it's out of control. So sometimes it does have negative risks or kind of negative reputational consequences because the people around are like, if you didn't want to do it, why didn't you just tell us? Like, why are you now so angry? Like, we don't get it. And they don't understand that from the obliger's point of view, all this has been building for a long time. So, and again, or if you're frustrated because you're like, well, why do I keep all my promises to myself, but I can't go to sleep on time. I can't exercise regularly. I never get myself to go to the doctor. I want to write a novel in my free time. I haven't worked on it in 6 months. Then I'm like, utter accountability. Like, yeah. It's not that it's simple, but it's straightforward to see, like, okay, how would I plug into that? Okay, like take the novel. You want to write a novel? Let's say you got kids at home doing homework. You tell your kids, hey, you've got your work that you need to do. I got my work that I need to do. You're getting home from school. I'm getting home from work. If you're doing your homework, I'm working on my novel. Right. And kids, if I'm not working on my novel, you don't have to do your homework. And your kids will be on you. And they will be watching you. And you'll be like, well, I have to work on my novel because otherwise my kids won't be prepared for school tomorrow. You've got your accountability. So there's all sorts of imaginative ways that people create accountability once they realize that's what they need. But of course, for someone like a rebel, outer accountability might be counterproductive. They don't want someone managing them or looking over their shoulder or telling them what to do or reminding them or nudging them. They want to do what they want to do in their own way. So they've got to have a completely different approach, which again, many people are rebels. This is not mysterious, but they kind of have to have that realization. Because rebels are like, well, why can everybody else use to-do lists?
Right.
Why can everybody else put something on the calendar and do it? And that doesn't work for me. And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't work very well for rebels.
Right.
It's not a surprise.
You got to figure something else out.
You got to, and there's no right, there's no wrong, there's no better, there's no worse. Like you said earlier, there's no one right way.
Right.
So it's just like, this isn't working for you. Okay, let's try something else. And you don't have to feel bad about that. Sometimes people are like, well, I don't want to have to depend on outer accountability. I'm like, who cares? If outer accountability gives you the life you want, who cares?
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
I have a 17-year-old who has recently been studying nihilism and absurdism in school. And she comes to me with these questions of like, what, Dad? It's impossible for you to tell me it means anything. Life doesn't mean anything. And at the end of the day, I think what I've tried to say to her is a version of like, what's going to make you enjoy it the most in the long run is what you focus on. And that's what it means. And that's pretty much all it means. And if we can have some tools that help us getting there, it's really, really exciting.
Yeah.
Gretchen, thank you so much. This has been a fascinating conversation.
Oh, thank you. I so enjoyed it. I feel like we could talk all day long. We're interested in so many of the same things.
100%. Thank you. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
And now for the Q&A.
I have a question for you today from Elizabeth.
Hi, Elizabeth.
She says, hi, Ethan. I want to thank you so much for sharing your story. The American Glutton podcast has saved my life and put me on a path of healthy eating and exercising.
That's amazing. Thank you.
She says, I've lost 30 plus pounds in the last year, and I started going to the gym 3 times per week. I'm a 56-year-old woman who is discovering that as I age, weight gain seems easier and weight loss is more difficult than when I was in my 20s. Have you had to adjust your routine based on your age? Interested in hearing your thoughts on this.
I haven't specifically adjusted my routine because of my age, simply because the routine that I'm doing, I really didn't start doing this routine until 4 years ago. So, and it's been working, and I would think that the adjustment that I would have to make would be, just honestly eating less and maybe making sure I move more. There are some great scientific studies on age and metabolism, and it turns out that the metabolism doesn't slow down really at all. But what does happen is that we stop healing in really the same ways, and we slow down. So we stop doing a bunch of stuff. But if you factor everything in, the metabolism is still operating in the same exact way. So as long as you kind of make sure that you are moving enough and not overeating, I think you can stave off any age required adjustments. And then you also have to beware, because you're going to have like your muscles are not going to heal as quickly as they did. There's going to be less rejuvenation. And so that becomes a factor too. But keeping all that in mind, I think my, you know, the structure that I'm following will largely stay the same.
Yeah. And as a woman, I want to say I really hear her, and you've recently had a couple of awesome guests on, you know, doctors that are talking about like women and as we get older and different things that happen with our bodies. So those are amazing to check out too, because I just found those to be so helpful, even just from the point of view of like, oh, I'm not the only person experiencing some of that, you know? So, just want to recommend those to her.
100%. Yeah. I can't speak for women and the hormonal changes. Like, men will have a lower testosterone, which means their muscles are going to atrophy quicker. Women already have that. And then they've got a whole other, you know, slew of things to deal with when they start having a decline in hormones. And so there, it does become like kind of a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for that question. And Ethan, thank you for your answer. For anyone else out there who enjoys this question and answer portion of the episode and has something they want to know Ethan's opinion on, you can always send us a question at AmericanGlutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee. You can follow us on Instagram at American Glutton Podcast. Sincerely.